This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we have a treat for you. We have Steve Trang in the house today. Steve is the best sales trainer, so we're actually going to take a deep dive into that. But before we get started, I'd like to give a brief bio on Steve. So Steve Trang is a founder of the Real Estate Disruptors Movement. The podcast has tens of thousands of followers, with new members of the community sharing their success stories every week. Steve has a nationally recognized sales training program and trains some of the top investors in the country. Steve's legacy will be to create 100 millionaires. One of his favorite quotes is from Zig Ziglar: "You can have everything in life you want if you will just help enough other people get what they want." He heard this quote when he first got into real estate, and it stuck with him throughout his entire career. In fact, it's essentially one of his core values Steve lives by. In addition to being nationally recognized sales trainer, Steve is a real estate wholesaler and flipper podcaster, YouTuber, owns a real estate title agency, rental properties, apartments, and the only community bank in Scottsdale, Arizona. You sound like us, Steve, serial entrepreneur here, right?
It's an addiction. It's an addiction.
That's amazing. So why don't you start by giving us a little background? How did you get started? Every successful person has a story, right? So you have a story. Yeah. I would love to hear it.
Well, I mean, I went down the boring route, and I guess probably a lot of entrepreneurs do, but, you know, I did the things that we were supposed to do, right? Get good grades so you can go to good college, so you can get a good job, right? I did all those things. And what I found was, in doing all those things, none of it was fulfilling.
Yeah.
So got a good job, excelled at it, got always, you know, excellent reviews, but, you know, the money in the reviews, that's great and all, but it's not enough. That's not enough for us to satiate us for the next 50 years or 40 mm-hmm. years, however long, you know, we're working.
Right.
And so, I think like everyone else in the early 2000s, I picked up a book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and you realize there's another way. And once you realize there's another way, you just can't go back. It feels like I think once you become an entrepreneur or understand this other world, it feels like you've left the matrix. Like, how do you go back in?
Yeah. We can relate.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about, how'd you get into, would you come prior with like sales training experience? Because you really do offer some great training mm-hmm. and our staff, we ourselves have gone through your sales training program. So I'm just curious, like, did you get that experience from another industry or just self-taught?
Well, it was definitely not self-taught. Yeah. The reality is, you know, I actually have a master's degree in electrical engineering, so I have a very, very heavy engineering background. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I was absolutely horrendous at sales. And it was because I was so bad at sales, I had to work on it more than anything else. And so, you know, what we learn as entrepreneurs is we hire to our weakness, you know? And so I hired salespeople because I was awful at sales. But then, you know, I came across, the Sandler Selling System, got really deep into that, got into Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. Mm-hmm. And you realize, oh, there actually is a science to this. This is not just art and feel and totally subjective. This can be totally reverse engineered. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. I just engineered the heck out of sales.
That's awesome.
I can't imagine you being horrible at sales.
You can't now. You can't now. But back then I was just a very empathetic, understanding person who just wanted to know. But the problem being very understanding was I was also very understanding of all the objections.
Yeah.
That's what killed me.
So let's get into some sales training. So can you, let's start off with maybe telling us your five biggest objections and how you overcome them, and kind of, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
I know we don't have time to go into everything that you teach, but
sure.
Yeah, just maybe some top, you know, sales tactics, some ways people can get started and start improving their sales.
So the top objections, you know, what I'm thinking about is, you know, I need to think about it, right? I need to think about sleep on it, talk to so-and-so, right? That's the number mm-hmm. one. Your offer is too low. Mm-hmm. The market, you know, like right now, right? The market's really hot, even though it's not. But like, you know, my neighbor's house, so for X amount. I would say those are probably the three toughest ones that people are running into today on a fairly consistent basis. I'll think of more. But I would say the first one I need to think about it was the one I struggled with the absolute most because, again, I'm a very understanding person.
Yeah, right.
And so I need to think about it. You come to learn really just means that I'm not emotionally sold, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we got to do is we got to get them emotional, because once they're emotionally sold, they'll just justify anything.
Right.
It's the reason why we drive the cars we drive. It's not because it's the most logical choice. It's that we emotionally were sold on it and then we justified mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And so for us, well, we had to do two things. First, we had to set the expectations when we first walk in the door. Mm-hmm. You know, we, with all maximum professional courtesy, you know, niceties and this and that, we basically say yes, no, or you're not allowed to think about mm-hmm. it, right? We have a script, and I'm happy to share that script with you guys later on, maybe as a downloadable file.
Awesome.
Basically, it's, you know, can I share with you how these normally go? Homeowners meet with want to know how much, when they're going to get it. Am I missing anything? Obviously, for me to figure out this house I'm going to buy, I'm going to need to ask you some questions that might be personal. And at the end, you know, we might work together, we might not. You know, are you going to be okay with that? And would you feel comfortable telling me no? Right. Again, it's much longer than that, but that's for all intents and purposes what it is. And when we tell them they're allowed to say no, we get fewer I need to think about it. Mm-hmm. Right. And by us saying it's going to be a yes or a no, when we get to the very end, it's like, hey, look, if it doesn't work for you, just tell me no.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. And they're like, then I, no, it's not a no. It's like, okay, so there's something else we must be missing. And they'll tell us what it is, and we can handle that objection,
mm-hmm.
right? But the other part of that too, like I said, we gotta get them emotional. We ask a lot of pain questions,
yeah.
like, you know,
mm-hmm.
Tell me more about what's going on. How long has been going on? When's the last time it happened? What have you tried to do about it? Did that work? What else have you tried? Who else knows about it? What happens if you can't fix this? Right? We're asking all these really difficult questions that mm-hmm. gets them emotional. And once they're emotional, they're emotionally involved. And we talk about, like, let's talk about what happens after you fix this. What's that going to be like? And they're telling us, like, all these awesome things. Like, okay, so you're feeling really crappy over here, really good over here. Like, what is stopping? Are we really going to let, you know, $10,000, $20,000 stop this from mm-hmm. happening? And most people won't, right? Like I said, you know, the cars we drive is because we've doesn't necessarily make the most logical sense, but we really enjoy it. So that's the first one, the I need to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is your offer is not enough.
Mm.
And that is an objection that we get, but it's also maybe reality of maybe this is not the right seller for us. Because, mm-hmm. you know, the houses that we buy, we don't buy all the houses, right? We're
right.
not a giant hedge fund or iBuyer. We only buy houses where it makes sense. And the reality is, And if you look at history, only 2-4% of homeowners really are the right targeted audience for us.
Mm-hmm.
All the other homeowners, it makes sense to go on the MLS, go with a realtor or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, first, we got to make sure our marketing is effective, that we're targeting the right people, the people that actually require our services, mm-hmm. not someone that just wants to sell their house. But once we get in front of them, you know, A, going through the pain of this and that, but we take our offer away. And that is really the best way to deal with someone that says your offer is too low.
Yeah.
You know, my offer is too low. Oh, I get it. You know, it doesn't sound like I'm going to be your buyer. Totally understand. You know, just tell me no and I'll be on my way. People really have a hard time saying no.
Are you still using that in like today's climate where I think people are now still stuck on, you know, you probably could have got that number 6 months ago, but mm-hmm. today you mm-hmm. can't. And as
I mean, that's something we'll say. It's like, man, I wish you called me 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Because 6 months ago, I could have paid you that number.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, like, you know, you talk about the acquisition audit, you know, Sean, mm-hmm. I appreciate you trying to get that number. At the same time, with the market going down, how can I do that?
Yeah. And what was your third objection? I forgot.
Third was the market's going, the neighbor, right?
Yeah.
My neighbor 6 months ago sold my house for this amount, right? Which is, again, a totally understandable position because,
mm-hmm.
You know, for all of history of real estate, we've been comping it versus the last 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But right now we can't do that. Right now we're only comping against actives and maybe even pendings, right? Pending data might even be too old, right? With the way the market's going.
Correct.
So we're only comping against actives. So, you know, for us, we're just saying, and this is true in negotiations in general, but, you know, I understand your neighbor sold for this amount right now. Here are some houses that are available right now. Like, how can you ask me to pay this amount? But the other thing too, you know, we always have the homeowners anchor us to a home that sold recently, mm-hmm. right? But why don't we ever anchor to a home that a cash buyer bought really low recently?
Yeah.
We don't, right? We're just saying, well, this is where we have repairs, we have maintenance, we have holding costs, right, and blah, 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 right? We try to justify our offer. But in a negotiation, if they're going to anchor us to this number, we can anchor it to that number. It's like, look, there's a home that sold nearby for this amount. Like, how can you ask me, right? A cash buyer bought this for this price. How can you ask me to pay more than what other cash buyers are paying?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I had a question on that. When you brought up the pain points, and do you do majority of your sales over the phone? Do you do still, how do you, Joni and I have always been much better in person, but you know, it's been I know sales over the phone have been a big thing over the last several years, but so are you doing majority of that over the phone? How do you
give us tips on how to
build that kind of rapport, right, ask the right questions over the phone?
Well, the conversations as far as the talking track and everything else is exactly the same, right? Where it changes is that we can't go as deep. So it's harder to buy as many houses. We can't go as deep because, you know, if I'm asking Sean, hey, what did your wife say when you guys had that foreclosure notice taped to your door?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's already a difficult question.
Right.
To ask.
Yeah.
But it's a lot easier to ask in person than over the phone. Mm-hmm. Right. Because in person, you're not going to physically pick me up and throw me out. Right.
Yeah.
But it's really easy to hit that red button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So what we found is we like to be in person, and a lot of our buying is in person. We do buy over the phone. I mean, you have to.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest difference we found between in person and the phone is the amount of rapport built.
Yeah.
The length of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then just at the end of the day, we buy more houses at deeper margins, or we get a higher percentage of closes at deeper margins that make it to close of escrow. And that's the thing that I think people don't really talk about when they're buying over the phone, right? It's not just you close more, you sign more contracts, and it's not just it's a better margin, but getting across the finish line, that's how we get paid.
Right.
We don't get paid until it actually closes. And so if they've met you face to face, they're more likely to stick with you. Right. Whereas if you're only talking on the phone, they don't know you.
Right.
They've talked to you, but you've seen like people don't have any loyalty to us. Mm-hmm. Right. Like if I talk to you and we sign a contract and we don't do everything the right way.
Oh, absolutely.
And we sign a contract and the next day someone comes in with a $5,000 higher offer, they'll just ghost us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot harder to do if we met face to face.
Yeah. No, you're building that trust, right? And I mean, when we used to buy pre-foreclosure houses, I mean, I would say 5 minutes or 5 hours, I'd sit there drinking a beer with them if I had to. Yeah. So,
whatever it takes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one of the questions I had for you was, how do you differentiate yourself and not just become like a commodity business? And it really is a commodity business. We're selling all the same things with the same features, maybe different price points. Mm-hmm. But how do you differentiate yourself from the competition?
So there's a few different things we're willing to do. You know, we have a philosophy of scorching the earth. So if we need to, we've gone as high as $10,000 non-refundable earnest money. Right? If it's a good enough deal, we'll do $10,000 non-refundable earnest money. Mm. Now, in this current environment, probably not going to do that. But in the past, right, 10,000 non-refundable earnest. We've done, we'll provide proof of funds, right? We'll waive our due diligence period, which sounds crazy, you know, in some markets. But in Phoenix, everything's cookie cutter. Pretty much all the houses are the same, right? Like if it's a problem, you can see it in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
This is not like other parts of the country where the boiler is buried somewhere, right? So for us, you know, we will waive the due diligence. I think those are probably the three biggest things. It's just like, you know, when we work with you, you know that we're going to close. And I think that's a lot of wholesalers will make offers, right? And just cancel last minute, and they'll sleep just fine. For me, a person is making a life-changing decision based off my words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm going to honor it. So absolutely. I think those are the biggest things.
Yeah. Well, now that you're just talking about the current environment, let's go ahead and segue into what's your opinion on where the market is headed and what are you doing to pivot and adjust in your local market?
It's not looking sunny in Phoenix. and, you know, it goes against a lot of logic because we still have relatively low inventory, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the feds have made it so hard for people to get a loan that demand is dried up drastically and demand should not be as low as it is. So, you know, it's not looking good for the rest of this quarter. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And Q1 is probably not looking so great either. But I think at the end of the day, it's looking like 2022. We had a run up all the way to like May. And then I think all that gain we had this year is going to be lost. And then it looks like probably in 2023, we're going to start off losing. But I think at the end of the year, we'll be fine. And we'll be even probably because there's still not enough houses, right? All the builders have stopped. They've just stopped construction. And we desperately need them to build houses.
Right.
As far as preparing, I have to actively start raising private capital.
Yeah.
We have foreclosures existing here. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to buy properties with creative financing. Where all we need to do, where all we'll need to do is get them current. So that's kind of what we're seeing as the biggest opportunity. We can pay market value if we can get wholesale terms.
Do you do a lot of rehabs and like pivoting there as far as like what you're willing to do, or do you mainly just wholesale?
We predominantly wholesale. We flip, but our flips are not the best. I mean, I wish it wasn't, I wasn't as bad at flipping as as I am. But you know, flipping requires two skill sets that I require that I have neither. A good eye, I just don't. Right, like I said, I was an engineer, right? So I just don't have a good eye. And then detail oriented. You know, you can see where the contractor screws up. I can't see where they screw up. Like it's just like, yeah, that's close enough. Right. So I think those two things, and I could hire it out for sure. You know, but it requires managing more people. And the, I would say right now with all my efforts and everything I got going on, adding more people does not sound desirable.
Get it.
So that was one of my questions was, yeah, do you feel like going, doing more is better, especially because you got a lot going on. Or are you looking at maybe focusing on, you know, improving what you currently have and the performance, the maybe going for higher conversions, better margins, that, you know, is that?
The focus right now, you know, we're actually doing a State of the Union presentation today, you know, where we just finished a quarterly meeting. So I'm going to present to everyone else. So each of the departments have their own respective rocks for this quarter. But the umbrella company, you know, Trang Holdings, our rocks is actually to provide all the support necessary so that all the companies hit revenue targets. That's the rock. It's not much more than that. Like, let's make sure everyone stays focused. Everyone gets the support that they require so they can hit their targets.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, we had a similar, our fourth quarter rocks are very similar to yours because it's not like, let's improve this or fix it. But it's more about like currently what we have, just resolving some of the issues, getting everybody to hit the numbers they're supposed to, hit our KPIs, but not necessarily add on or do anything different.
Yeah. There's two things I've been saying. One is I personally believe at least in Phoenix, Q4 is the season to survive. This is not the season to thrive. You know, I want to go out there and crush it and all that, but Q4 is a season to survive, not to thrive. And then Jason Lewis, a good friend of ours, right, from Collective Genius, in his presentation, he said something along the lines of, if we can just close the gap between what we know and what we do, we'll have more money than we know what to do with.
Yeah.
And that really resonated with me.
That's awesome.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. Have you noticed it? Are you seeing other wholesale companies or anybody start to struggle yet in your market?
It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
I notice I get a lot less emails and text messages and everything else.
Yeah, we have, so in the past, we would be competing against 7 or 8 different wholesalers. You know, this is Phoenix is like the mecca of wholesaling, you know? Right now, what my guys are telling me is we're going against 2 or 3 other people. Wow. And those other 2 or 3 don't follow up.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You know, Steve, you're super successful and, you find the time to you know, spend as much time with your family. Like I don't know if balance is the right word, but how do you do it all? Like, what are some tips that you can give our listeners on how you kind of manage it all?
I appreciate that question. I would say the first thing is you have to be very clear that's what you want. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people say they want work-life balance, but they don't really want it.
Right.
Right. They're saying it because that's the right thing to say. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think yet if that's what you truly want, then you can make it a priority. So the first thing is, you know, we learned this from Darren Hardy, is time block what's important, right? I can tell how important your family is by how many hours is blocked off in your calendar for your family, right? Mm-hmm. So I say that's the first thing. If it's a priority, actually make it a priority in your calendar. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. A second thing, it only works if you have amazing people. So I've been incredibly blessed in my career to find excellent quality, high talented people, high caliber people that are willing to put up with me.
Yeah.
Right. Because if they weren't, then I'd be having to deal with all the fire. So I got incredibly competent people that do not require me. And I think that's the greatest honor you can have as a business owner.
That's right. You know, so you probably don't know this, but that time blocking tip that you just gave, I actually learned that from you at the Collective Genius Mastermind. So we talk about the Collective Genius a lot in here. But yeah, I mean, that tip right there, I use that. Yeah. So thank you.
On that note, how do you go about finding those highly talented? I mean, it's been a struggle, you know, last couple of years to find that talent and recruit. Is there any tidbits that you would offer advice to find? Do you overpay? How do you recruit those?
Wish I was overpaying because I want to pay everyone more. The reality is I want to pay everyone more. Everyone is compensated. All our leaders are compensated based off of a profit share model. Right. And right now, truthfully, things are slower today than they were last year. Right. I mean, last year was a record year.
Right.
I just got my tax bill. I'm not happy with the tax bill. Right. But this year, you know, it slowed down a little bit. But as far as having the talented people, the key really isn't sourcing them. Because they've all come from a variety of different ways, between LinkedIn, our posts on social media, referrals, Craigslist. Like the one that's been with me the longest was a Craigslist person, right? It's been 7 years. Mm-hmm. It's not really the sourcing as it is the filtering. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everyone has to take a predictive index profile. Everyone has to go through a rigorous interview process. We use the interview questions from the book Who by Jeff Smart. Mm-hmm. So we use that. So I think just making sure that a good culture fit, you have to be clear on what your company's values are, what you're willing to hire and fire based off of. Mm-hmm. And then you can measure that, you know, in the interview, you know, tell me about people that you admire. What is it you admire about them? And from there, you can figure out what their values are.
Yeah.
Another question I like to ask is, tell me about your best friend. Because who do we hang out with? People like ourselves.
Right.
Right. So I'm just asking them to tell us about them without saying those exact words. And so having a rigorous interview process allows us to figure out who are the people we want to bring into our inner mm-hmm. circle and who we want to be very sure about not bringing in. The other thing too, again, I learned this from Darren Hardy, was when we're hiring, is if it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Pretty simple too, yeah. Right? So, and are you finding that, it is such a change in maybe like compensation, because you're just not doing the volume you used to or something. How are you talking to your team, keeping them motivated?
Yeah, that's a big
one. I guess, you know, they probably understand where it's a cycle and we're in that. So I'm sure maybe they're grateful they just have a job, but I'm just curious, how are you keeping them engaged, you know, when they go for
I think the big thing really is that we're all going towards the right direction mm-hmm. and we all believe in the mission, mm-hmm. you know, like for us, you know, I talk about creating 100 millionaires, that starts off with the people within the organization.
Right.
And I think the other thing as well is that we genuinely care about the people and we listen to our people, which mm-hmm. is not something that comes easy or natural, especially as a driver, right? Mm-hmm. Like you just want to get things done. We just want results, this and that. But, you know, everyone in any seat at the company has full authority to challenge anybody else. I don't care if it's a different department. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's your boss. If you don't agree with it, you voice it. One thing that we're having it's not a statue, but we're printing something that says silence is violence. You know, we're going to rebrand that message,
yeah.
right? But if you feel something and you're not sharing it, you are making a conscious decision to hurt the company. That's how serious we take it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how do you do when they challenge you?
I was going to say, do they challenge you?
They challenge. Oh, I get challenged all the time. Yeah. And I'm receptive of it. And sometimes they'd say, I'm sorry. It's like, no, like I need to know this, right? Because, but again, right? Because they're all motivated, right. Not motivated, but compensated by profit. Like it behooves them for the company to do better. And I, again, they put up with me, right? I get to do whatever I want, whenever I want.
Yeah.
So I have to, part of that has to be letting them drive the companies the way they feel is the right way to drive the company.
Awesome.
You know, Steve, so one question we always ask our listeners, which actually we got it from David Phelps, what's your next?
What's my next?
Yes, what's your next? What's
Steve's next? This exact moment, at this exact moment, Ren Bartlett and I are pushing sales leadership training.
Ooh.
You know, nice. I think that we've done the sales training and it's gone very well. And I think that as entrepreneurs, where we often get frustrated is that we'll train someone up, teach them the business, show them how the business works, show them how much we're making, and then they leave to compete against us.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's this revolving door. So there's two problems. You got the revolving door of your salespeople leaving you, but then you talk about the motivation inspiring. We have this roller coaster, right, in revenue. And the roller coaster is like this when, you know, we're small. And it's the same exact thing, but way bigger when you have a bigger team, right? So what we need to do is be able to, like, level that out. And the way you level that out is, again, you know, working with the team actively. So Ren and I we just launched sales leadership training. And, you know, that's what I'm most excited about at the moment.
Is that an online program or course? What's that look like?
It's going to be Zoom calls twice a month with Ryan and myself.
That's cool.
That's great.
Awesome. So one question we ask a lot of people too, like if you were to go back into your, you know, just yesterday, your early 20s and redo it all over again, but keep your, you know, what you've learned over the last several years and years working, what advice would you give yourself? What would you do if you were starting all over again in your 20s?
I guess, let's see, if I had to figure it all out again in my 20s, maybe that you don't have to have it all today. You know, I think that I'm always trying to chase more and get more and do more and chase after every opportunity to say yes to all of these things.
Uh-huh.
And I still struggle with this today.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not saying I've got this figured out. But just knowing that you got time on your favor. It doesn't have to happen today. Cause I think we put a lot of stress on ourselves, you know, longing, wanting, because someone has something we want. Mm-hmm. Right. But it doesn't have to be today. We got time, especially in your 20s.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. And it just so you know, that's probably the advice of many people we've asked. Yep. And it's like, but yet it's like the hardest thing to teach of somebody in their 20s. Like they don't get it. They're, especially in today's culture, they want it now. And they don't realize what you and I have, like, all of us in this room have put up with over the years to get where we are. It definitely didn't happen overnight.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely.
I will issue not necessarily a lesson, but just a warning for everyone else too, if they're in their 20s, is that 95% of this journey sucks.
Good advice.
So you started off that it's great to be an entrepreneur, but
well. 95% of the stuff we do, right? The deal we have to put up with is pretty hard, but the 5% we get,
yes,
I would not give it up. I would not trade with anybody else.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
It's so true.
Yeah, we take a beating, but like I wouldn't have it any other
every
way.
Day.
Yeah. So,
You talked a little bit about your sales training, but I really, really believe that, or I know that our listeners can benefit from your sales training. So you have the leadership training. What other, things you have going on that our listeners can
get involved with you. So.
I would say the biggest thing is the sales part. That's where I'm going to try to dominate that world. Mm-hmm. So if they're interested in that, we have disruptors.com/salesmasterclass. That's where we take everything we've learned and we put it into a digestible form on I think Kajabi.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's that. We have the book Active Listening 2.0. You know, you can find that on Amazon.
Awesome.
But yeah, I think there's that. And then if they want to learn more about, I guess, wholesaling, then we have Real Estate Disruptors, the podcast.
Sweet.
Right.
And you're active on all social media if they want to follow you.
Yeah. Instagram at steve.trang, on Twitter, on TikTok. That's a fun experiment.
Yeah.
I got to look you up on TikTok and see what. Yeah. That's awesome.
Oh, cool. Well, there's
no dancing. Don't expect any dancing. Okay. There's no dancing. Well, I think if you scroll back far enough, you'll find some dancing.
Probably the COVID years, right? I think we even had some dancing in those.
Yeah.
When you're bored, locked up. No, we appreciate that. We'll put it all in the show notes and how they can get a hold of you and work with you. And we appreciate the time today and you taking some time for us and with our listeners. So again, thank you very much. And anything we can ever do for you, please let us know.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me. And again, congratulations on winning the National Franchise of the Year.
Yes.
So congratulations. That's an honor. You guys are definitely doing things right.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Steve. It's been great.
Yeah. We'll see you all next week. If you like this, please share it. Please rate it. We'd love to get your feedback. Otherwise, we'll see you all next week.
See ya.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkle. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talk, talk, talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.